Nacho Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you for joining us for a Friday edition of the Calcio Land podcast, already our 45th episode. So today in the second part of the show, we have a great interview with my friend Richard Hall of Gentleman Ultra. We had him on because he just came back from Milano. He's going to give us a temperature check on what's going on, not only with Milan and Inter, but actually in the city and all the excitement now that the teams are back. I think you guys will really enjoy the interview. We have, of course, the Thousand Names, very popular predictions for the matches this weekend, and your great Twitter questions, which continue to blow us away. But before we get to that, I am joined by our excellent co-host and producer, Alex Goldberg. Before we get to the weekend, let's catch up on what happened in the midweek matches. So I wanted to ask you, Alex, did you have a chance to check out any of the games?
I certainly did. I'll be honest, I didn't catch Lazio-Napoli live, but it was such a good fixture on paper that once I got rid of my Chelsea League Cup game and watching Hazard log 90 minutes, I fully watched Lazio-Napoli. My first takeaway was Lazio should be really disappointed. They score first off De Vrij, nice play by Immobile to get it to him, and then all of a sudden they concede 4 unanswered goals. But then to flip it around, what a win for Napoli, winning on the road in that fashion. That's the type of win that they're going to need to keep getting in order to win this Scudetto. It was a balanced performance from Napoli, except for probably Pepe Reina, who, David, I couldn't help but think when he let in that first goal, your take on if Handanovic was the keeper of Napoli, they might be the clear-cut favorite because the defense was good, Koulibaly was great. Napoli's midfield is so balanced, and they can, as I said a few episodes ago, they can pretty much switch out 3 for another 3 midfielders. They made somebody who I like in Marco Parolo look terrible. I thought he had an awful, awful game. And then the front 3 of Napoli was great again. Lorenzo Insigne, my boy, hit the post a few times. Cajon got a nice goal, but the takeaway on the front 3 is what a golazo from Dries Mertens. He is once again having an incredible start to this season after an incredible campaign last year. And my takeaway on Mertens is, I've watched Belgium for a few years now, and he always, looked like not only a poor man's Eden Hazard, but for a while it was almost like, Kevin Morales, Dries Mertens, what's the difference? But what a player he has become, and I partially wonder if I just didn't realize how good he was, but I also wonder how good has Sarri made Dries Mertens? Like, he's becoming one of the top, I can't believe I'm saying it, but top strikers in the world right now, and that's just ridiculous. I mean, that goal was all confidence, and, he's been scoring for a while now with really electric-type fashion. So that's my takeaway, quite the win for Napoli, scoring 4 goals on the road at Lazio. I can only applaud them. So, David, that's what I watched. What about you?
I'm proud of you. That was quite a great analysis on the game. So I watched that a little bit as well, but you covered everything on Lazio-Napoli. Couldn't have said it better. So I watched Benevento-Roma. I haven't watched as much as Roma as I should this season, so I caught up there. Granted, the opposition wasn't very good, but I was more impressed with what I saw with Roma than in weeks past. Then I watched a bit of Juve-Fiorentina. Big win for Juve. They keep winning even when they don't play well, and that's a great quality for them. I think what you said about Lazio-Napoli is really perfect. Napoli is really a serious contender despite their issues at the goalkeeper position.
All right, David. So we are done with 5 weeks of Serie A. Winners and losers has been a lot of fun, so let's keep the fun going. Who are winners and losers of episode 45 of the Calcio Land podcast?
So we touched upon a little bit in the games that we watched. So I'm going to start with Mandzukic, my boy. I tweeted this and I really believe this. It's very easy for people to always get excited about the shiny new toys. Douglas Costa, Bernardeschi, great offensive wingers that you think can elevate Juve, especially in Europe. But just because you have these shiny new toys, don't forget about the old reliable teddy bear that as a kid got you through a lot of tough situations. And that to me is Mandzukic. Granted, you don't really think of a teddy bear when you watch him play. I think he could replace Liam Neeson in those bad action movies, but good for him. Continues to be decisive for Juve. I'm a huge fan of his, and I'm glad Allegri keeps believing in him, because to me, he's really one of the hearts and souls of Juve. Another big winner is Sarri. In a couple of occasions this season, he's completely turned it around in the second half. We saw it in the match against Atalanta, had a bad first half of the San Paolo, then crushed them in the second half. That's what happened as well against Lazio. We're going to get into in the questions, but I thought Biglia, huge winner for Milan, has been a brilliant player when healthy. I thought that was a very exciting addition for Milan. They haven't had a midfielder like that since the Pirlo in his prime. It was interesting that Montella described that Biglia really leads Milan with elegance, is always in the right place, and is really such an important player, especially on a team that has so many new players, to have a veteran that really knows where to be on the pitch. Was also very impressed with Bologna against Inter. That's another game that I watched. I have to say, in general, I haven't been the biggest Roberto Donadoni fan. I saw our friend Gab Marcotti tweet how underrated he is a manager. I don't necessarily agree, but I have to say I've been very impressed with Bologna. They face Napoli and Inter, have only 1 point to show for it. But guess what? They probably could have won both those matches. Speaking of Bologna, another player, sensational match for Simone Verdi. One of the players that I wrote about as someone ready to take the leap from good to great, really had another sensational goal against Inter. Another winner we'll get into too in the questions is Atalanta with a 5-1 win against Crotone. And the last winner that I have is Dzeko on Roma. It's interesting that right after he made those quotes after the match against Atletico, feeling that he's isolated up front, he hasn't stopped scoring. Our friend John Solano pointed out that he has scoring pace is even better this season than last season when he won the title for highest goal scorer in Serie A. So Dzeko, definitely a winner. It seems that that speech, that interview he gave after the match against Atletico seems to have energized his team quite a bit. As far as the losers, I have two of them. You mentioned Lazio's being, you know, a bit unlucky. Not only did they lose badly at home against Napoli, taking away a little bit of their momentum, they also suffered some pretty serious injuries to their defense. De Vrij, to me, one of the best center backs in Italy, maybe even all of Europe, unfortunately has issues with staying healthy. He has a muscular issue. Sounds like he'll miss a couple of matches. Also, their underrated right back, Basta, has been there for a while. He might be out for 2 months. So not only did they lose against Napoli, they lost two very important players to the team. And then the other loser is Benevento. Really one of the worst teams I've seen in Serie A in quite some time. I watched them against Roma. It was really hard to watch in a way. It goes to show, just last week I saw someone had tweeted that Benevento was third in Serie A as far as shots attempted. But then when you watch them, it's like, geez, how is that even possible? So not only did they lose badly at home against Roma, today their captain, Lucioni, got also is going to get a suspension for doping. If you're doping and your team's playing that poorly, I don't know, maybe get another chemist, because it doesn't seem to be working out too great. So those are our winners and losers for the mid-week action. So now let's get into someone that gives you winners very often and is becoming very popular thanks to our podcast. And this is my good friend, Thousand Names. Let's recap what he did last week. He had Udinese Torino 1-1, Torino 1. He nailed Lazio-Napoli. He had it as Napoli winning 3-1. It was 4-1. He had Juve beating Fiorentina. He had it as 3-0. Juve won 1-0. He did guess that Mandzukic scored. So 2 out of 3, which seems to be his average. So shout out to Thousand, and let's see what he has for us this week. So what we do is I'm going to read his predictions. I'm going to do them both in English and Italian. We have a lot of listeners in Italy who want to hear what Thousand is predicting, because he's given us the exclusive for Serie A. And then I'll add a little bit of color to it, so you know, you get a little more details on the matches. So first one we have this week, Fiorentina-Atalanta. His prediction is 1-1, goals by Simeone and Petagna. His analysis is Pioli is going to get too cocky after his team's performance in Turin against an overrated Juve. He thinks the Viola are ridiculous. So I think Thousand, and you'll see too in the other predictions, he seemed to be a little bit upset this week. So in Italian, pronostico Fiorentina-Atalanta, 1-1, Simeone Petagna, Pioli illuso dalla debolezza della Juve, Viola ridicoli, and then his signature fidatevi, which means trust me. So this match, I don't have too much to say. I have to say we got Richard Hall in the interview segment complimented Fiorentina. I agree. I was not impressed with their transfer window, but a lot of these young players that they hired look that they signed this summer really look promising, and Pioli is really starting to put his imprint on the team. So next prediction for Thousand, the Derby della Mole tomorrow, Juve-Torino. He has Juve winning 1-0, goal by my boy Mandzukic. His analysis is Allegri's catenaccio against Mihailovic's nothingness, the Derby of boredom. I told you, I think I caught Thousand. Was not in the best mood. So this is an exciting derby. Interestingly, both Allegri and Chiellini have been really pumping up Torino, saying they can finish in the top six. I think Chiellini went as far as saying they could compete for the title. Very impressive. Torino might this summer really went to bolster their weaknesses. They've improved in a lot of areas. This is going to be an important test for Juve. Torino always plays them tough in the derby. In Italian, pronostico Juventus-Torino 1-0, Mandzukic, il catenaccio di Allegri contro il nulla di Sinisa, il derby della noia, fidatevi. And last prediction, a bold one, Sampdoria-Milan, and Thousand has Sampdoria winning 2-0 with goal from Quagliarella, who's off to a great start to the season, good for him, and Caprari, the young prospect they got from Inter this summer. Thousand's analysis, Montella continues to get slapped around when facing tough opponents. Milan's transfer moves were absurd. So a hot take from him there. Interesting match in Italian, I'll read it. Stamp Milan 2-0, Quagliarella Caprari, Montella continua a prendere schiaffi contro avversari seri, mercato ridicolo. So an interesting thing about this match is, of course, Montella used to manage Sampdoria. Also, Sampdoria's manager, Giampaolo, came pretty close to becoming Milan's coach, and then they went with Montella. If I remember correctly, Giampaolo was Galliani's guy, and then they didn't go for him. I think this is going to be a pretty good test for Milan. Definitely an upgrade over facing Udinese and Spal-type games. Always traveling to Genova, playing at the Marassi Stadium can be pretty rough. Other games that of note for the weekend, we have Inter at home against Genoa. Inter, to me, really needs to show something. The past two matches against Crotone, they were saved by Handanovic. And against Bologna, they got away with a point in the towards the end of the match. So I'm interested to see how Inter is going to react to Genoa. Then we have Roma at home against Udinese. My colleague on Di Marzio's side, Paolo, is actually going to go to the game. I know he's excited to see that. So let's see how that goes. To me, another important test for Roma, who need to keep winning to keep up with the top teams. And then we have Napoli, who are going to be traveling to Ferrara to face Spal. It's going to be interesting to see if Sarri does some turnover and how Napoli does. So right now, Juve and Napoli have won all their matches. Let's see if they can keep it going. So thank you to Thousand for his predictions. Keep looking out for his tweets. He does give some predictions here and there as well that are always entertaining and sometimes spot on. So, Alex, speaking of spot on, the fantastic questions we get from you guys, please keep sending them in using the CalcioLand hashtag. And while you send questions, please also consider leaving a review, retweeting the show. We count on you to help promote what we do. So, Alex, which questions are we going to go over today?
It finally happened. It finally happened. What is your take on Diego Costa completing his transfer to Atletico Madrid?
So I think, you know, it's good that this isn't hanging over Chelsea. Good this isn't hanging over Conte anymore. So for you, that's good news. Conte won't be asked about this anymore, probably just for a week or so. I think Conte didn't particularly handle this situation that well up front. So good that it's finally coming to an end. I think Diego Costa, of course, won't be able to play for Atletico till the transfer ban ends. So he'll be be able to play in January, but at least he'll get familiar with the team. I think Atletico really needs kind of a shot in the arm, and he'll definitely bring that. Have a lot of people tweeting me about, oh, what does this mean for Griezmann? And it's like, listen, guys, it's not even October. I think, you know, the transfer moves we can talk about are the ones like Diego Costa. So much can change from now till then. In January, Griezmann will be cup tied. I don't know if it makes sense for a team to try to get him there then. I have a feeling he's at least going to finish the season, and then we'll see what happens in the summer.
Yes, and as a Chelsea fan, he won two titles with us, but I'm glad the deal is finally done. And yeah, Conte is probably the most glad. All right, David, moving on. Through 5 weeks of Serie A, which summer transfers have impressed you the most?
So shout out to Matt Santangelo, sent us this question. Doing really a great job with all his writing on football. So thank you for the question. Keep up the great work. So I picked quite a few. I kind of wanted to do a wide range. So these aren't necessarily in the order of the best move, but these are all signings that have stood out to me. So let's start in Milano. Of course, Frank Kessié, I think, has been really outstanding for Milan, continues to be a real difference maker for them, really dynamic player. Not only is he very good defensively recuperating the ball, but also really has an exciting offensive game. So I think Kessié has more than lived up to the hype with him. On the other side of Milano, we have Skriniar at Inter. We've talked about him ad nauseum on the podcast. Very, very impressive signing. Let's move to Turin. I have two of them. I have a Torino goalkeeper, Sirigu. Great signing. To me, a vast upgrade over what we saw from Joe Hart. Two on Juve. I'm going to mention Matuidi, who I think has been doing really quite well. Of all the new players, the one that Allegri has trusted the most. The other one I have for Juve is Bentancur. Has been really, really good. And, you know, this to me reminds me of maybe that Tevez deal that Juve did wasn't all that bad. You know, once it happened, a lot of Juve fans were so upset, saying that Juve's running a charity, letting him go back for free to Boca. And then guess what? They got Bentancur in the deal. Tevez now in China, overweight, complaining about things, you know, going being the difficult Tevez that we didn't see at Juve that probably would have turned into had he stayed. So to me, that deal doesn't look that bad after all. Speaking of a former Juve player, I haven't seen much of Crotone, but when I have, Mandragora, the Juve prospect midfielder, has been very impressive there. Other one that I really like is on Fiorentina, this French midfielder, Veratout, has been very good. You know, a lot of these young players that Fiorentina director Corvino uncovered when we had James Horncastle on, he said he thinks Corvino is really a great director, and I agree with, especially with finding these young players. And I'm going to close on two left backs that have really impressed me. Of course, Ricardo Rodriguez on Milan, really, really good. Man, it's so hard to find good wing backs, and Milan hit a home run with him. And I think Roma did as well with Kolarov, who has a great partnership with Zecco, two former Manchester City players. I think Roma's defense has been pretty shaky overall, but Kolarov has been really excellent for them. As usual, when people ask me to make these lists, I'm terrified that I'm forgetting someone, but those are my picks so far.
All right. They had a 5-1 win against Crotone midweek. Is Atalanta really this good?
I have to say I've come around. We had one of our listeners, and I apologize, I forget his name, who asked us about Atalanta at the beginning of the season. And I said, you know, I suspect that we could see Atalanta struggling because they're in the Europa League, a little bit how Sassuolo did last season. They really fell apart after the Europa League. And boy, have I been wrong about that, at least so far. Atalanta crushed Everton, then they crushed Crotone. They're off to a very good start in Serie A. In the first match of the season, they lost to Roma. They probably deserve to win. Atalanta actually has quite a bit of depth, which Sassuolo didn't have last season. They have Ilicic coming off the bench. They have Cornelius, who had a cup of coffee in the Premier League at one point. They, as usual, have exciting young players. They have the center back, Palomino, who's looked pretty good. He actually took away some starts from Caldara for a bit, and they have on the bench Juve prospect winger Orsolini, very exciting player at Ascoli from Serie B last season. So they got a lot of options. And Atalanta hasn't even really used Spinazzola after all the drama in the summer. And he's going to be like a new addition when he hops back on, because he's really a player that's done very well for them. So I got to come. I was wrong about Atalanta. Shout out to that listener who corrected me. He was right. I was wrong. And good for Italian football, because Atalanta is also one of those teams that plays a very exciting brand of football, and they get results with it, so that's great.
Moving to the old lady, will Douglas Costa be able to unseat left winger? I'm still not used to calling him a left winger. Mario Mandzukic, or will he have to take Cuadrado's place?
So here's the thing with Mandzukic. For me, he completely transcends positions. To me, it doesn't even really matter so much where you put him. Obviously, yeah, more on the offensive side, but the way he plays with so much grinta, so much passion, doesn't really matter. I definitely think at some point, you know, Douglas Costa and Bernardeschi are going to be playing a lot more. It's going to be interesting to see whose playing time they take away. It's not out of the question that, you know, Mandzukic then starts helping out Higuain a little bit more. If Higuain's scoring drought keeps going on, we could see Mandzukic at central striker and someone taking his winger spot. I just think Allegri is going to keep relying on Mandzukic quite a bit. I also think Cuadrado gets a bad rap from Juve fans. I get that he can be frustrating, but it was Cuadrado who had the assist to Mandzukic on that Fiorentina match. A lot of the tight games that Juve has, it seems that Cuadrado is one of the players that resolves it. Allegri too hinted today that he might do some more turnover because there's a lot of games coming on. So not surprisingly, Allegri always eases new players in very slowly. So I think we'll start seeing more of that. I just think Mandzukic could be playing a lot of different roles this season for Juve.
Speaking of a player that's being eased in slowly, David, did Bernardeschi make a mistake going to Juventus in a World Cup year?
So let me start by saying that this is another thing that I was wrong on. I never thought that Fiorentina would sell Bernardeschi to Juve, and they did. I think, you know, this goes back to what I just said. Juve always eases in new players slowly. At this time, it looks, yeah, like Bernardeschi is not going to play that much. The World Cup is coming. There's a lot more talent up front for Italy that might impact him. But, he's made an impact off the bench. I think it's only a matter of time till we see him playing more. He can cover basically all the roles behind the central striker in Allegri's 4-2-3-1. He can play in the 4-3-3. So I think it's a matter of time for him getting more playing time. So I reserve the right of just waiting a little bit more to say if he made a mistake or not by going there with the World Cup coming.
All right. How about Stefano Storaro? Will he be able to reinvent himself as a gritty right back?
So last season we saw Allegri reinvent Mandzukic from a central striker to winger. There's been a lot of injuries at the right back position, with De Sciglio being out, and then Lichtsteiner isn't on Juve's Champions League squad. So Sturaro might actually be pretty good as a right back. He kind of reminds me, one of the first Juves that I was watching growing up was in the mid-80s. They had this gritty right back, Favero, who played on defense with Cabrini, Scirea, and Brio. He kind of reminds me a little bit about him in that sense. Just a gritty, no-frills defender. I think he could do quite well in that role. Juve's midfield is so stacked right now, especially with Bentancur showing a lot. So I think, you know, once Marchisio, Khedira come back, Sturaro would see no playing time there. So I think this kind of makes sense both for him and Juve to kind of reinvent him in that role.
He had a stinker midweek. David, what is the best way for Inter to employ João Mario?
Man, when I think about it, is there really players in Serie A who have such a wide range of performances as him? Like, João Mario can be devastating one match and then absolutely unwatchable the next. I'm going to say that if I was Inter for now, I'd use him as an option off the bench. I think Inter has some good midfielders. They have Gagliardini, Vecino, Borja Valero. I think Brozovic has really been a spark plug for them. So if I was Spalletti, I would try to motivate João Mario and maybe use him as an option off the bench and kind of have him earn that starting spot again. There's enough other good players that, you know, maybe you don't give him a chance to have a total stinker from the beginning. You just kind of use him as an option off the bench.
Yeah, he'd be electric off the bench. So much pace, and he's dynamic. That could be a decent option. All right, I think I know your answer for this next question, but maybe you'll surprise me. David, if you had to win just one match, which current Serie A manager would you want?
This is a great question, and I've been thinking about it a lot. So I think the obvious answers would be Sarri, Allegri, Spalletti. I can make a case for all of them. I think those single match, I'm not going to say Sarri because I feel like a coach like him, he needs time with his players, really develop them, buy into the system. So if I'm thinking of like a manager that gets dropped into a squad to get one win, as much as I love Sarri, I don't know if he'd be my pick. I think you can make a great case for Spalletti or Allegri. I'm going to say, though, Allegri's track record in Europe is considerably better than Spalletti, so I'm going to go with him. A surprise name that for some reason keeps sticking in the back of my mind is Chievo coach Maran. I know, Alex, you didn't expect this one. I just think he's a very solid coach. His teams are very organized. It's not really exciting to watch, but if my life depended on one match, I really wouldn't care so much on how good it looks. I'd think more, can I get the results? So of the non-obvious answers, I'm going to say Maran, but push comes to shove, it's going to be Allegri.
I like it. Just learned something new. All right, David, the last Twitter question. What do you make of the American owners in Italy? Can we expect more in the near future?
Very good question, and apologies. We didn't get to it last week, so I'm glad we're doing it now. So I could be wrong right now. The two that I can think of are, of course, James Pallotta in Rome and Joe Tacopina, the New York lawyer, who used to be in Roma's management, who's now at Venezia, exciting team now in Serie B. There's also Joey Saputo, but he's Canadian. He's at Bologna, so let's not throw him in the mix. I think for Pallotta, he's really in a tough place at Rome because of all the pressure. He's trying to build the stadium, which, you know, I'll believe when they start breaking ground on it. I'll be skeptical until that happens. And even when they break ground, I'll be skeptical because God knows what they'll find under there. There could be some monument under there, and they're like, oh, we got to shut it down. I think he's in a tough spot. It's just a very demanding place. People, like, he's done a very good job financially. Like, Roma was in an absolute mess of debts when he came on board. Financial fair play. I think he deserves a lot of credit for what he's done. But people in Rome, I think, are always going to be skeptical for him because he's an American based in Boston. I think they'd like more of a local guy. But I do think it's really, right now, there's great opportunities for American entrepreneurs to invest in Italian football. I really think there's a lot of momentum for calcio as a whole. I think Joe Tacopina was very smart buying Venezia when they were in the third division. Very wealthy part of Italy, a serious project with Pippo Inzaghi as coach. So good things there. I really hope we won't have another American owner in the sense of the Elliott Fund taking over Milan with the Chinese owners. Hopefully it won't come to that. So hopefully we won't have an American owner in that sense at Milan. But again, if there's any American entrepreneurs listening, I recommend you invest in calcio. There's really some good opportunities to get teams on the cheap. And I really think Serie A calcio as a whole is on the way up. So thank you guys again for the questions. Really tremendous. One of the reasons why the show gets really good reviews is your questions are excellent and it's easy for Alex and I to riff on them. So let's get to the interview part of the segment. We have my good friend Richard Hall from Gentleman Ultra coming on. We've had him on, I think it was 6 weeks ago, whatnot. We talked a lot more about journalism and his site, a lot of great tips there. If you want to learn more about that sort of stuff, check that out. Today, though, we really got into just Serie A, and especially because he was in Milan. And I want to take this opportunity to thank you, all you guys, for listening, subscribing, and helping us promote the show. Great. For the interview segment of the show, we are very excited to be joined once again by our good friend, Richard Hall. You guys know him as the creator of Gentleman Ultra. You can read him today. He has a great column on Football Italia on the Derby della Mole, Juve Torino. You can read him on Guardian Sports, Calcio Mercato's English page. You can hear him on Sirius XM. To me, he's one of the biggest experts when it comes to the clubs in Milano. So we are thrilled that you're joining us today, Richard. Thank you so much for hopping back on Calcioland.
Thank you, David. It's always a pleasure to be on this show. It's always great to listen to. So thank you so much. Very honored to be on again.
Fantastic. So, Richard, the timing is perfect because I know you recently came back from Milano. And, you know, I know you. You've been traveling to the city for over 10 years, for quite some time. So you've lived through the past years where both clubs have really struggled. There's finally a reason to be excited for both teams, I think, beyond, you know, a small run of good results. Beyond those that have happened, there's genuinely good reasons to be optimistic for both Milan and Inter fans. So before we get to the game that you actually went to see in person, tell us a little bit about the mood of the city and what you noticed this time around.
Yeah, it's strange. If you put both clubs together and look at when the mood was as good as it was, you know, when the feelings were really great. I remember watching Inter lift a Scudetto back in 2007 with Mancini, and the mood was good then. Okay, Milan had suffered a little bit, but there's still a lot of optimism about the future. Okay, Inter have had some good times since Milan have, but realistically, the mood, it's just been deteriorating in so many ways over the past sort of, well, like you said, pretty much past, especially in the last 5 years. To go back to Milan, it wasn't a big game. It's Milan Udinese. I was interested to see what the new Milan side was like. But to go back and see how it's affected the city, I was taken back by it massively. Because without going too far, if you look at the derby in 2015, when I went to that, the mood in the city, it was almost, I spoke to a lot of people at the time, because it was a strange atmosphere. Because that derby, the choreography was intense. It was absolutely incredible. And it took me back. Because in that season, you know, a lot of the attendances were poor, the moods were poor, the teams looked like they were out, you know, couldn't compete with the Bundesliga, especially with the Premier League. There was a lot of doom and gloom about the place, and it almost felt like that derby in 2015 was the sort of last hurrah. I did an article the other day about it, and I just kind of described it like it's like a cavalry charge against machine guns for the first time. It was really like they were just, the reason they made it as big as it was to say, we're still here. But when you talked to everyone around the ground, it was, you know, they weren't optimistic about anything else. Tendencies to where the games were really down. It was sad, but brilliant at the same time. This time, going into the city, the city and the stadium, it combines itself. The mood in the stadium was incredible. The ultras were different. The Curva Sud was, for Milan, was unbelievable. The place was happy. People were talking about, okay, don't get me wrong, you talk to fans every day. And, you know, one guy compared Andre Silva to Marco Van Basten. You know, okay, so people, but it's silly, but people are excited. Inter and Milan fans are both excited, but for different reasons. So there's a massive buzz. And, you know, I think football's kind of fashionable again now in Milan.
Very interesting take. And, you know, it's not surprising to me that there's much more interest in Serie A than I can tell as a whole, because both these clubs are relevant again. So for me, it elevates the mood, not just in the city, but for people like you and me who cover the league and fans that just enjoy watching it. So let's talk specifically about that game. You were at San Siro to watch Milan play Udinese. They pulled off the win, maybe struggled a little bit more than some would have expected. You know, I notice every time I go see a game in person, I get a radically different impression than when I watch on TV. So tell us a little bit about going to that match and what stood out to you about this new Milan.
Yeah, you're 100% right about when you see, I mean, we take away the Austria-Vienna game as a practice match almost in some respects, the way it turned out. This Milan side, I was interested because was it going to gel? You know, we've seen them play quite well. You know, how is he going to get the rotation right with the Europa League? They had, as we said, just played on the Thursday. But what was really interesting is, I mean, going just very quickly back to the mood in the stadium, the Curva Sud were doing this sort of Icelandic clap. There's drums in there, which I'm surprised. It's the first time I've heard drums in a stadium in Serie A, because it's supposed to be banned, etc. Or were supposed to be. So the atmosphere is very, very full on. So I expected them to start the games, maybe perhaps to be quite frenetic. In fact, it wasn't. And for a team that's been together for, a couple of, month or two, they were very composed. very composed and very slow build-ups. It was strange because they seem to be extremely successful on set pieces as well. I think he's now 40% of their goals this season have come from set pieces, and you can tell they're working on that very heavily. But what was strange, obviously, they've only just moved to the back three. I think one of the biggest shocks to me was probably when they went with the back three. Okay, Musashi, Romagnoli, Bonucci, all great players individually, all good on their own. I felt Bonucci was covering a lot for that back three. I thought Romagnoli, apart from the awful back pass to Lasagna, had an incredible game, actually. But the point being was, they were covering... Donnarumma is a very nervous goalkeeper when he's got the ball at his feet, and I didn't know that. He doesn't come across on television. Bonucci and him, the amount of talking and communication they had was incredible. So what's interesting is it's not the team I expected. It's more composed overall, but, you know, they're fallible. They certainly are. Udinese have not been particularly great this term. But I think the two things to come out of it was that they've still got a lot of work to do, definitely on the right track, more organised than I thought. My God, they rely a lot on Kessié.
Yeah, Kessié's been absolutely sensational. Interesting way to say to me, I think they were waiting for Romagnoli to come back to go to that three-man back line. And as you have commented and we've said on the podcast, it's going to take some time for Milan to gel. The good news for them is they've won all the matches they were supposed to. So they've at least set themselves up well that way. So speaking of Milan, you got a chance to see them. The league overall is better than it's been in years past. Where do you think they can realistically end at the end of the season?
It's an interesting one for Milan because there's certain areas. I mean, if you take Kessié out of that team, you know, he's been in indomitable so far this term. And so, you know, if everyone stays fit, I don't think there's any reason they'll certainly be Europa League. And you think they could actually realistically talk of a Champions League spot. I think one of the biggest differences is going back to that back three, it's good for them in the way they've switched. But when you take away those three we've just talked about, you know, you've got what Paletta, Zapata to cover there. And my worry is just how... Have they actually, I mean, don't get me wrong, at the beginning of the season you say, did Milan have great centre-backs? Well, of course, with the two at the back, you think they've got cover, they bought extremely well. But now in a back three, you take one of those out and it does become a little bit of a weakness. Not massively, but just, you know, it's an area. So there are a few things. They've got another window to address, of course, which you'll obviously cover exceptionally well, as always. But for me, I would say next season for Milan. I think, you know, we're watching Milan next season, I think, and they trust Montella. I think they're going to be a serious, serious threat.
I completely agree with that assessment. I think, you know, finishing in the top four, they've said all along is their goal. And I think next season, they'll be definitely in the race for the Scudetto. So let's talk about their crosstown rivals, a team you've covered very well for a long time. The past two games, I think Inter took a little bit of a step back, especially against Bologna. But overall, the results have been good. Spalletti has definitely made an impact. Skriniar looks like an absolute revelation. Tell me a little bit, what's your impression of Inter so far?
It's an interesting one because it's completely... They're much further down the line in their project. So, you know, it's taken a little longer. And there was a lot of players in and out this term still. I'm really impressed with what Spalletti did in the window. I think Borja Valero, as we've talked about before, has been excellent. And he has got them more fluid. I think they're much more, how can we put it? The transition's quicker. You know, they move the ball. They've struggled for many, many, many years. I mean, Nicardi, what he's done on his own, despite the coaches and players around him, it looks like they've finally found a way to supply Icardi. Perisic, of course, is coming into his own more and more and more. There's a lot of positives. As you say, Skriniar has been fantastic as well. A great find. And so I think they, again, you know, yes, the last two games weren't great. You know, Bologna's not actually always the easiest place to go anyway. So I think they've got to take away that there's more positives than there were negatives. Everything that was negative about the Bologna and the Crotone game was the fact that it can be worked on the training ground. It's not like they have a huge huge problem, like a mental problem like they've had for a while that, you know, it takes a lot of time to fix. These are minor details. And yeah, they make mistakes. They're going to continue to. So for me, I think Inter, I think there's a really crucial point coming up. They've got Genoa on the weekend. That's going to be, you know, it's never easy, but Genoa are beatable for Inter at this moment in time. And Benevento, then, unfortunately, you know, for Benevento, I think that's going to be 3 points. It should be 3 points. Then there's a derby. That's going to be the key. If they can have the momentum into the derby and win that derby, who knows? Inter could then potentially go on to do something well. You know, and potentially, I'd be looking at maybe third after Juventus and Napoli. I mean, these are only silly predictions after the start, you know, a couple of games, really. But my fear for Inter is one of them is very similar to Milan. Skriniar and Miranda, when they played together, if you remember Jason Murillo, he really heavily lent on Miranda. So if Miranda had a bad game, so would Murillo. I'm a bit worried that Skriniar, as good as he is, he's leaning on him too heavily as well. So you have this situation where, against Bologna, I didn't think Miranda had the best game. The balls are coming down the middle, and it affected both of them. The second one, which would kill Inter off, as title contenders or Champions League, take Mauro Icardi out of that situation, and you're relying on Pinamonte or Adair. You know, that's not going to carry you to where you want to be. So, again, fantastic work's been done. Massively positive mood for Inter, but, you know, there's still areas to work on.
Yeah, I think, you know, Inter has the advantage of not having to play in European competitions. And, like, I think what you mentioned on Murillo and Skriniar is a great parallel, because Murillo also got off to an amazing start, and then we know how that ended. So you mentioned Juve and Napoli being, you know, a step above everyone else. That's what everyone predicted going into the season. I'd say almost everyone. And in the first five matches of the season, that's what we've seen. Have you seen enough positive things from Napoli that you think they're a serious challenger to Juventus for the Scudetto? To me, this is the best rival Juve has had since Ibrahimovic played for Milan. So I wanted to get your take on Napoli as a whole.
I think you're spot on. In a day, the best way I would put it into to pay Napoli the biggest compliment I possibly can is that today the television, you know, streams, whatever it is, we are saturated with football from every single league over the world. We can watch everything 24/7. So back, you know, when myself and you probably grow up, you know, you might see Red Star Belgrade play on the television. They captivate you because who are these players? It's amazing. It's different. You don't get that anymore in football. You don't turn on the television and be captivated. You know, the social media, everyone's tweeting or doing this while they're watching the game. Napoli, the one team in Europe at the moment that you want to put the phone away, you just want to put everything away, you just want to watch them. You're paid to watch them. And in today's society, I think it's so rare. They're just brilliant. The football they play. I mean, the Corriere dello Sport today, which you have seen, paid them the compliment and said that, you know, they could be the one team in Italy since Arrigo Sacchi's Milan to change the face of Italian football. I mean, as we know, Sacchi's Milan, when he's 4-4-2, very attacking, wouldn't stop at 2-0, would continue to go on and beat teams 3-4-5. It changed football in Italy.
Yeah.
And this Sarri team, according to them, could do the same thing. I don't know if we go that far, but at the same point, you know, when they lost Gonzalo Higuain, it left a huge hole in the squad. And the way they've had that collective ability to score the goals, even without Milic last season, the transformation of Mertens is incredible. And, you know, I think Gazzetta said it today, you know, Napoli are beautiful, Juve are ruthless. But, yeah, they've got the team and they could seriously challenge.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that Corriere dello Sport headline. I saw it today, and my reaction was twofolded. For one, yeah, I was like, that might be a little bit premature. But on the other hand, I keep seeing so many people saying, oh, Sarri can't win with his style. But guess what? Sacchi did when he had Baresi, Maldini, and a great team. And I think you put Sarri on a team like that, I have no doubt he'd win. So we've talked about Inter, Milan, Napoli. Tell me what else has stood out to you in Serie A so far this season.
I think so. There's a couple of things, really. I think the tempo has been it seems to just continue to increase. The game seems to be quicker. It's exciting to watch. Even some of the teams that are coming up are deciding to actually go out and play, and that's great. That's good. That's good news. Last year, I've enjoyed watching. Been incredible. I never actually thought that Chidoa Mobley. I was sure he was an excellent player. I've always liked Chidoa Mobley, but I never thought he was top quality. You know, the real top quality. And you know, you'd and ah about what are his abilities, and he's proved me completely wrong at the moment because he's been spectacular. I've really enjoyed watching him. And you know, you're looking at this now, and I'm very interested in how Roma are going to do as well, because with Roma, you've got the situation where. Excuse me. When Patrick Schick comes back, is he going to be the missing link? Because it doesn't seem like the Frel's doing spectacularly well there. He's probably not his perfect position. So there's lots to go at. I mean, we could go on and on and on. Fiorentina again. I mean, that team, you know, you look at them in the first game of the season, obviously, against Inter. And I thought, my God, you know, this is problematic for them. But Pioli, they're turning into such a Pioli squad now, but at the same point that's the best Pioli squad, they could do some damage to some teams and really upset the apple cart at certain times. So, yeah, I mean, you can go through the league, but and the relegation battle is going to be extremely interesting this year as well, because I'm starting to feel extremely sorry for Benevento as well. So who knows? But, yeah, there's so much to go at.
So I'm going to put you on the spot since you wrote about this right before we recorded. What's your take on the Derby della Mole coming up between Juve and Torino? There's been a lot of hype on Torino, and I think pretty justified. They kept Belotti. I think they made some very smart additions to bolster really some deficiencies they had last season. So what do you think we can expect from this Derby tomorrow?
I think it's really exciting. It's really strange because I think this is one where Torino are going in thinking we've really got a chance here. The comments from Allegri, the comments from Chiellini, they're taking it seriously. They're very, very seriously. They know they're a threat. I quite liked Adam Lajic's comments of them, you know, today saying that he feels he's back. Like you say, Belotti's there as well. They've really toughened up the squad. Sidigu I think that's such a good signing. I think we saw him against the Benevento. He kept them in that. He was fantastic. I think he could be a difference maker there. And, you know, reading about it, you know, people keep saying that Juventus are going into some sort of transition again and, you know, life after Bonucci, blah, 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 blah. But how many goals are this guy? I mean, if that's a transition, then it really is. It's not a bad one, is it? I mean, every time you think Juventus, you know, they just keep doing it, and winning Scudetto is almost just—it's just second nature now. So I don't know. I think there's some games earlier on in the season that, you know, it's one of those things. It's almost like the sliding doors moment, isn't it? And it's like if Juventus go on to win this game, you can just see them off they go. But to be beaten by it's all right for Juventus maybe to lose to Napoli, maybe even Inter, but to be beaten by Torino this early in, that's going to put questions because there has been questions. But you'd be a silly man to bet against Juventus.
It's interesting you talked about the transition at Juve. I see it more as, you know, a transition where you go from being great, taking a step back to take two forward after. I see it more of a transition of going from emphasizing defense to going all out on offense. And so far, it seems to be working, but maybe their back line is going to start catching up to them. So the last thing I wanted to ask you about, Richard, last time we had you on, we talked a lot about journalism and the great, fantastic writers you have on your fantastic site, Gentleman Ultra. For those who missed that interview and aren't familiar with what you do, what I love about the site is that it really gets into the culture of Italian football. You know, you have the ultra aspect, but also the tactical appreciation, the history of what makes Italian football so exciting. So tell us a little bit about what we can expect on your site in the coming months.
Yeah, well, we're nearly there. We've taken a little bit longer than expected, but we're revamping the entire website. So it should be either next week or the week after. It's going to have a brand new look. We're not changing the format massively because, you know, hopefully don't think it needs too much. Much of the same, but there's going to be a few differences. Luca and myself are looking to bring back the alternative guide to Italian football and maybe even delve into Serie B for that, so that should be interesting. I'm always trying to get the interviews, obviously, with the different ultra groups that could go with that. You know, Blair is working extremely hard on the tactical areas of that, so there's going to be much more of that. And also, we're also looking, there may just be a couple of interviews as well, when we're talking about the nostalgic players. There's a little sneaky interview with a certain German who used to play for Inter back in the 90s, so that'll probably kick it off as well. So I think there'll be a lot more interviews over the coming years, and yeah, we're going to try and get the real insight of what happened with back then in the 90s by people who obviously were actually there.
Great stuff, Richard. I'm looking forward to your site coming back. I could always talk calcio with you for hours, and I hope we get to do it in person in Italy very soon. So thank you so much for joining us, my friend. I look forward to having you back on as the season progresses.
Cheers, David. I think we will definitely have to get a game at some point. Definitely.